Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to The Mentor, I'm Mark Boris. My guests today are Don Robertson and Matilda Murray. They are the co-owners of Stax. Now Stax is a fashion-forward premium activewear brand made for performance and lifestyle. When working from home became the norm this year, Stax had a surge of new business as people started to work and work out from home, and demand for comfortable clothing just boomed. So much so that during lockdown earlier this year, Stax released a collection of activewear that earned them $150,000 in just 7 minutes. When people's attention focused online, Stax used their social media reach to highlight the brand to a captive audience. They had the right product for the right time, which has made Stax 2020 the best year to date with 2,000% growth. Wow. Early on, their stock was affected by COVID as their factories were forced to close over a 6-week period, leaving them without any product. But when factories returned to work, their online sales boomed and they were more in demand than ever. I'm going to ask Don and Matilda how the business has leveraged the visual impact of social media to create brand recognition, how they've dealt with the huge increase in customer demand, what's the dynamics of partners when they're romantically attached, how does that work, and how their strategy and business models work to make this year the best on record for the business. Go e-commerce, so let's get into it. Don and Matilda, welcome to The Mentor.
Hello.
Hello, thank you so much for having us.
You're welcome. Now, you're a couple. You're partners. Business partners?
Yeah, and romantic.
And romantic partners. That's a good way of putting it. Romantic partners. So it's rare that I get a couple in to talk to me. So that's pretty cool. Generally speaking, most of the entrepreneurs that I deal with are sort of one out, and you know, they've got partners, but they're not in the same business. So I actually want to explore that a little bit, the dynamics of being in business with your partner. Like,
yeah, people are very interested in that. Yeah. Aspect of how we do things.
It's yeah, being at home all the time, and then you know, being at work and all that shit, and then also COVID and how that affected everybody when you're in lockdown and you know you're in each other's pockets 24 hours a day. That would be a tricky one to navigate. But we'll get back to that. Well, can I ask, how'd you guys meet? Where'd you meet?
So
what's the deal?
We're both from Perth originally. Yeah. We moved over to Sydney early 2019.
Oh, you only been here for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah, just under 2 years.
So you've got an English accent?
I'm actually South African.
South African?
Yeah.
Well, you got an accent.
So yeah.
I didn't pick it. And where, can I just whereabouts in Perth? Because Perth's one of my favourite places in Australia. So
yeah, so it's funny because we met smack bang in the middle of the city and then Till lived in Joondalup and I lived in Kangvale, so opposite ends. And then, so we sort of met.
So right. Why'd you come over here? Like, why'd you come over these folks? I mean, like, I know West Australians, generally speaking, you know, where is the dark side over here. So
yeah, I mean, we were quite removed from that, but it was purely based on business. It was a business decision. You know, mm-hmm. Till and I were heavily involved in you know fashion and social media, and the brand was booming at that point. But we got to a point where we just sort of capped out. You know, logistically, it didn't make sense. It was expensive to trade from Perth. It took forever to ship. We were 100% e-com. So shipping worldwide, importing from China and the world, everything stops by Sydney first anyway.
Oh, is that right?
So we saved 3 days on transit times. And then, yeah, that and just the exposure to the industry for us, you know, the whole fashion scene and the e-com scene, it's just quite advanced in Sydney compared to...
There is a noticeable difference then, is there?
100%. Yeah, we hit the ground running.
You mean in terms of networking of people?
Yes.
Or,
yeah.
Networking, models, you know, everything you can think of in that.
Access to all the inventory that you need to run a business like this.
And just professionals to support, you know, photographers, videographers, creatives. Perth is a little bit laxy in that sense.
People just hanging out. You know, well, not if you're in the mining industry, though.
I think a lot of it is FIFO in Perth.
Yeah, yeah.
So over here, there's a lot of people that are Sydney-based and working, which I think has been...
And, you know, really we also wanted to push the boundaries in our brand. So people didn't quite always get that. We want to do quite creative fashion things. We want to do creative campaigns, but you're quite limited. You know, one thing that was noticeable is the amount of studios, for example.
Here?
Yeah, compared to in Perth. There's not a lot of studios to shoot in.
Is that right?
There's tons of studios to shoot in, just from a photography point of view.
Yeah, so access. Mm. So let's go back a little bit. Let's peel back from beyond 2009. Did you say you arrived here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's peel back a bit. You both look like you're probably in your 30s. So.
Ooh,
that's
28.
Touchy. 31, 21.
28.
28. Okay, close enough. So. Let's go back to, say, 10 years. I mean, what's the deal? What were you guys doing 10 years ago?
So my background is in recruitment, and I always thought I'd be in a safe corporate job. And I met Don on St. George's Terrace. He was working in a supplement store. I was working in recruitment. I would go in on my lunch break and buy a protein bar and flirt with the cute supplement store boy. And I never, ever thought that I would leave my safe job to go and sell tights, like, ever. I was just working recruitment, started receptionist, and then kind of moved my way up into a senior consultant account manager role. And that was me. That's what I thought anyway. I didn't think I had a passion. I was just like, oh, yeah, recruitment's easy, you know, work hard, get paid well.
That'll typical do me. Girl 21 or 20, just give me a job.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll see how it kind of pans out.
So you weren't some sort of super ambitious person,
not really, no.
You know, you weren't sort of saying, I'm going to change the world with my A fashion label one day.
No, absolutely not. I wish I was. I wish I had this story where I was like, this is what I wanted to do my whole life. But I literally met Don, fell in love with him and fell in love with the brand as well.
So Don was Stacks before this?
Yeah, so Stacks actually started as a supplement store called Muscle Stacks.
Oh, right. Was it your store? Or?
Yeah, it was my store.
Yeah.
The long story short of it, I opened it up in a gym I was working in. And then things didn't work out. It went really, really bad about 2 years in. And then the gym we were in went into liquidation and we didn't have a lease contract. So they just assumed that everything that was part of that facility belonged to that facility. So they seized all that as well. So
all we inventory.
Lost our inventory, lost our equipment. Without having to fight much into it, I just pretty much decided to cut my losses and decided to launch apparel online.
But did you have apparel at the time?
At the time, we did apparel.
As well as the supplements.
I saw it coming. I saw things weren't working out and we pivoted. I decided to change. We built an e-com site through Shopify.
Well, I want to know about this a little bit because when you say you saw it coming, so let's just go back a few steps and before we get on to how you and Matilda sort of kicked off together in the business, but let's just go back a bit. You were working in a gym and you had your own line of supplements called something Stacks.
I was a retailer. So we sold supplement brands, so proteins and
just a whole variety, what everyone was taking, you know, all that various different types of proteins and various stuff. So you were like a store, a retail store.
And at the same time, we were doing community apparel. So we did Muscle Stacks apparel, you know, T-shirts for the community.
The
gym community, yeah, right, Canningvale. Right. Shout out to Canningvale in Perth. Everyone in Canningvale was wearing my T-shirts.
And it was called Muscle Stacks.
It was called Muscle Stacks at that time. And then, it went really well, but I realized that the agreements weren't in place and the structure of the business wasn't in place. I think it was 22 at that stage.
You got crushed, liquidated, crushed it.
Badly.
So, but like, how is it like, where's your sort of sense of fashion and apparel come from? Like, what's that deal?
So, growing up in South Africa, I'd always been involved in the arts, entertainment, did a bit of music, worked in a bit of theatre, did a lot of that in school. So the creative side was probably the most inspiring side in me that I enjoyed the most. And then I also love sport. So when I finished school, just before I finished school in South Africa, I got an internship at Nike.
Cool.
So I worked there for about 12 months for no pay, just learned a lot. I repacked stock rooms and I was just absorbing everything. I was absorbing the environments and that's pretty much I think, the foundation of what I wanted to achieve. And I had that in the back of mind the entire time. So when we moved to Australia, I worked at Foot Locker for a while and just really learned the hustle and bustle of retail.
But that whole fashion thing, where's that? I mean, I know you said you did some creative stuff, because a lot of people sort of would be listeners and be saying, well, I like fashion, you know. I like to do what Stacks have done, but it's not just a matter of I like to. There's some sort of driving thing in there. There's something, some sort of passion that makes you actually get off your ass and do it, like, and push through all the shit times too. Where is that, your parents or no, was it Matilda when she came along? She pushed you along. I mean, what is it?
Yeah, I just think it's the ability to create freely. You know, fashion is an art form. So from that perspective, I consider
myself. So you define it. You say fashion's an art form. So because a lot of people don't look at it like that. I mean, I don't look at fashion as an art form because, you know, like I'm not a fashionista in any way. But I get it now when you say it, because defining something straight up, articulating it with a definition, fashion is an art form. All of a sudden, you look at it differently. I mean, is that your thought process?
We get to create for people. You know, we get to make a product for people that makes them feel better. That makes them, and we believe, look better. We create things in a way that is a little different in our space. So it's, for me, it's the ability to express ourselves. That's what I love most about fashion. And then we've just brought it into activewear. Fitness fashion.
Mm. Well, that's interesting. That's interesting. Having a definition of something. That's to me, defining something like that makes it a bit more sexy, to be honest with you. It makes it more interesting and more attractive.
Totally, yeah. But that's what sort of inspired me to do a lot of independent research and understand the major fashion brands of the world, you know, like the Louis Vuitton, the Balenciagas and the Dior's, and understanding the history and the story of how they started and what they've contributed to the world and society, and understanding the following that they've built through, you know, 100 years, for example.
The community, right?
Community, same with like Nike and Adidas, the story behind it, like, they actually artists, you know, the designers are creatives.
And it makes people want to be a part of something as well, which I think like we're very big on too. People will shop Stacks and then they want to share it because we've built a community where people feel welcomed and people feel like they're part of something, which I think is like one of our like driving factors when it comes to fashion too.
Maybe I'll ask you, Matilda, because like you obviously met this very handsome young man working in a store and as you say, you fell in love with him. But what sort of sucked you into the vortex of what fashion represents, like the definition that just fashion's an art form? What sucked you in? Like, what pulled you into all this?
I think I've always loved fashion.
But in the same way?
No.
So,
Don is such a creative, and I think he's really just showed me, he's taught me about the history of fashion, and he's taught me about the community that a brand can create. And just hearing like how passionately he talks about things and how something so small to some people can have such a big meaning to others, which is now me as well. It's really, yeah, I think that is like just hearing his passion really like transferred across to me. And like I said, I was just not interested in leaving my position. And then I fell in love with the process and fell in love with his passion for it. And he kind of passed that across too.
Well, that's interesting because, look, for me, for anyone to be successful in, I don't give a damn what it is, but in any venture, you've got to have somebody who's a student of the thing that you're trying to promote. So let's call it fashion. You're a student of fashion. So, you know, as you said earlier, Don, you studied how all the other great brands became great brands, how they build the communities, as Matilda just mentioned. Like, and I guess you see it as, it's more rewarding for you if you do see something as an art form. In your case, you see fashion as an art form. And then what you do is, you've got to get people who support you. You can't do it on your own. And there's nobody better to support you if you're lucky enough to have that than your business partner or a family member. But somehow you've got to teach or transfer that same energy into that individual. Now, either Matilda's ready to accept that, or alternatively, you sort of pushed it towards her. I mean, did you sort of see Matilda as somebody, wow, here's a girl, she's smart, you know, blah, 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 she's with me, I can trust her and all that. Be good if she could come along with me on this journey. Or was it you, Matilda, who said, I really want to come along with Don on this journey, even notwithstanding the fact that you're with him together?
No way. I think for both of us, we were so reluctant to participate as, I guess,
yeah, because everyone's like, never work with your partner. Like, that's what was drilled into us, so, never do that.
So to give you context, at, at the time we met, muscle stacks went belly up. Like shit hit the fan. It didn't work out. I was negative 80K in debt. I was working four jobs at a time. I was not interested in a relationship. I was not interested in anything. I was just trying to make, I was so focused on making sure that I could keep my brand alive. So I had this job working for another retailer in the city until it come to the store every lunch break. And
To get a protein bar.
Actually, check you out. And to be honest, there's a funny story we tell. She used to come in and complain about the price of protein bars. And I was like,
they were very overpriced.
I was like, and babe, it's like $5. Support small businesses. But anyway, so it intrigued me. So, you know, we grew fond of each other, et cetera. And then I thought it was quite clever with my pickup line. I gave her a pair of my tights. She pretended to love them.
Are you already producing tights there? Yeah.
So I had managed to rake up some money and I bought 300 pairs of tights in three different colorways. And I gave her a pair.
They were ugly.
She pretended to love them, but I came to
hear. I didn't
like
them, but I thought Don was cute, so I just went with it.
So I said to her, I was like, hey, babe, can you, I didn't say babe, but that's it. I just said, hi, Matilda, could you please take a photo and I can post it of you on our Instagram and I'll tag you.
Because you thought, oh, she's a good sort. I'll put her up. It's a freebie for you.
She's a babe. It was good at the time.
Nice content that was very ruthless.
So it was clever, I thought. And so she took the photos, sent the photos through to me. But it was through Instagram. No, but the quality was terrible. So I said, hey, can you
the photo?
Apparently.
So I said, you need to send it to me via text. So we exchanged numbers and then, you know.
That old one.
It was smooth. Anyway, so it pretty much grew from there. We built our relation based on our personal relation first. You know, we got to know each other over time. I kept the business to myself because I was having a lot of struggles personally. And then it just sort of became a thing where Till started helping out more and more and more. And then her ideas just contributed more. And then before we knew it, on weekends, we were doing pop-up stores together. Mm. Till is quite a leader as well in her community. So girls in the space were following her. They were engaging with her as the medium of the brand, especially for women's activewear. So it just kind of fell in place.
I guess it wouldn't have worked if you had to put yourself there a pair of tights. You know?
I mean, it's probably not the right, most appropriate thing to be doing. So,
what did you think of the tights?
I did not like them at all.
Why? What was wrong with them?
They were just...
Because I'm always intrigued about red activewear. I mean, yeah. I don't get it. I don't understand how
it
works.
So it said our motto or our quote is passion over everything. And Don's design had the ASS, so the ass in passion, highlighted. So the tight said ass over everything.
It was just not my thing.
It was just not my thing. But what about the fit
and the style? Is that okay?
Yeah. So the style, they were a blue pair of tights and with a white strip down the side. And people asked for them to come back now. They're like, oh, they're so like iconic in the Stax brand. So
they were ahead of its time. That's what I explained to people.
So they were nice, but we have definitely perfected the tights. We now have a pair of tights called our Best Black Tights. Best Black Tights.
Best Black Tights.
And they are the Best Black Tights. We've definitely come a long way since.
It's one of those stories where your first product is the one you're most embarrassed about. It wasn't phenomenal. It took us about 4 years to really perfect that product. And then we've just launched our Seamless range, which is incredible. And that took us about 5 years to really nail as well. So the first product sold, you know, I was able to sell them all from the back of my car.
Yeah.
But we've definitely gotten better from that point.
So just in terms of the dynamic, because I'll talk about the business and the product maybe after halftime, but one of the things I want to get my head around is I don't know how you know this stuff, but like you've gone and bought three colors of tights, I guess, in three or four, I don't know how many sizes girls have, but like five women's sizes for argument's sake. Like, how'd you do that? I mean, did you get on a telephone? Did you get on the internet and find someone in China to do it for you? Or did you just wholesale here?
Alibaba is a brilliant tool. Yeah. Every supplier you can think of is listed on there. So just extensive research on there, lots and lots of samples.
Because Alibaba is an online thing, so you can't walk into an Alibaba store in here and look through it. And did you travel to China to get stuff or
not
what?
Not for our first run. For the first run, I shopped to find a supplier. I drew up my sketches. I measured the product and created the specification of what I wanted.
But how did you know what to get?
Research, you know. There were so many brands doing activewear at the time.
You just went and bought something from everybody and just had a look at it all.
I didn't even buy it. I went to look at it in stores. And then when I was chatting to suppliers, they obviously had a lot of base models that they sent through, and then we made adjustments. I got some girls to try it on. I was working in the fitness industry at that stage, so every time I got, you know, a whole pack of samples in, many of them were really piss poor. I got girls to try them on. We did fittings. I did adjustments, went back and forth for a couple of months, and then we finally found a pair and a cut and a fit that we loved, and we were ready to bring it to market.
That's your first run, though?
That was our first run.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't know much about tights, but, I mean, sometimes when I box, I have to wear tights for a whole lot of reasons under my shorts. And just blokes' tights, I've tried them all, the branded ones anyway, the ones you buy at something like Rebel or something, you know, just go and I've tried them all, and they're all different. And they're all sort of hold you, so to speak, differently, you know. And some are comfortable, some are uncomfortable, some don't tie properly around the waist. You know, they feel like they're not right around the waist. Some are too tight. There's looks like to me the old ones, the original ones that everyone used to wear, all the football players used to wear. I don't know, the well known ones. I can't even think that they're called now. But they had seemed to have different material. They were real compression tights. I couldn't get my head around it. I still can't get my head around what's the right sort of material and what the right product is. Did you go into that depth?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Over time, though, because those are the things you didn't realize at first. You think that, you know, tights are very complicated. It's easy to print a T-shirt and sell a T-shirt with your logo on.
Yeah.
But, you know, tights and activewear, it's a specification. It's a technology that's used to create the fabric. And then it goes into this technology that's used to actually create the product. That was a huge trial and error process. You know, we constantly improved on the product. And we didn't get it right for many years. We constantly took the feedback and reformulated the product, made those little improvements here and there, and found the right fabric. The fabric is the key. The fabric is everything, because the fabric will determine how the product really feels.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that's what I mean by functional. I mean, you know, it can't pull up or whatever. I mean, I don't know whatever it can do. But so you've got to have it. So what are the tenets of what your product should be? Like you saying, and how long did it take you to work this shit out? Like functionality, in other words, I'm also – let's call it modesty, if that's a word.
Yeah, squat proof.
Squat proof is everything.
Squat proof. Yeah.
That's
okay.
The term. That's give it like
for modesty.
If it's not squat proof, it's not even worth bringing out. Like that's the number one test.
Is it number one?
So number one is squat proof.
Girls, is your marketplace girls or boys and girls?
Probably 70% women.
Okay, so that's a big piece of your market. So, one of the first things they have put up there, and they actually use that word squat proof.
Yeah,
right?
Is it squat proof? Yeah,
which means I can do a squat in the gym. Yeah. Without my bum show, Monday show, totally. Whatever the case may be. Is that what we're talking about?
That's best case scenario, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then out of interest, what's the second thing that this stuff's got to – what's the second thing that everyone looks for apart from price?
Just the feel of the fabric. It's the feel of the fabric. And I think the thing that is appealing for our brand is the size run. Mm. We're a very, very inclusive brand. We size from extra, extra small to 4XL at the moment. In our core ranges, which is huge. I think it's an 8-point size run. It's a massive thing.
Is it?
At the moment, because, you know, there's girls.
That's catering from like a size 4 to 6 to a size 26.
Is 4 small, I guess?
Yeah.
4 is really small, is it?
Yeah. 3-2, yeah, 4XL. Our
goal is inclusion. And that's been a really big thing for us.
But that's a brand. Is that a brand thing, though? I mean, is that more about what you stand for, inclusiveness?
I think it's a problem thing. I think it's identifying that there's men and women of all different shapes and sizes that want to be wearing these products, but no one's catering for them for whatever reason that may be.
So does an extra, extra large person, doesn't necessarily mean the fact that it just could be a really large person, let's say woman, do they want to wear this stuff?
100%.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And they want to go to the gym and they want to feel good in the gym.
Yeah.
And they want to look good in the gym.
Yeah. So, but you, how do you know that?
Just feedback, really.
Like, feedback.
We've got such a strong community as well. We get feedback constantly, which is great because we do get to learn what people want. And it's the same with like the tights and everything like that and how we've perfected them. We have listened to people and what they want and what they don't like about particular pairs of tights and particular brands. And then we come out and hopefully do better every single time we do a release.
So what sort of unfolding here is all the iterations of your product, be it sizes, I presume price, or premium versus non-premium, the price gets attached to that, the fabric, the squatability, whatever the word was, And but each of these variables introduce another iteration of your product, and the iterations take a long time. So, you know, like I guess people, because people would think, oh, well, yeah, this went out. You know, I spent a month doing research and I found, you know, these really cool tires, and I went to Alibaba and I ordered them and all that sort of stuff, and I'm up and running, away I go. And now I just got to run a social media platform and make sure I can deliver. For those people who think that in relation to a business like yours, what would you say to them, like in terms of patience and what it takes to get through that process?
I think one has to be very clear in the difference between a business and a brand. It takes a very long time to establish a brand. You know, it takes a generation to establish a brand. In this crazy time we're living with social media and e-com, it's very easy to start a business. It's easy to put a lot of money into the back-end systems of a business, but not necessarily in selling the product. And when you've sold through your first couple of runs, how do you follow up? When you've exhausted your best friends, your best friend's friends, and you've sold everything to your family members, how do you acquire new customers and how do you build that reputation? It takes time. It takes a lot of time, and my advice in that sense is spend very little and focus a lot.
Spend very little money.
Yeah, spend more time on edifying the product and building relationships, because it's very easy to lose money e-com.
Yeah, and what would you say about the concept of being patient? You come across a fairly patient guy. What do you? I mean, like, how long have you been at now? 10 years? 8 years?
Yeah, I think we've been 8 years.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and it's, by the way, it's really the last, you know, 18 months, it's really, really taken off.
Yeah, that's what it does.
So Till was working full time up until last year.
Just a year. It was pretty much my full-time, the other anniversary. Job. Yeah. My full-time Stax anniversary just over a year ago.
Yeah,
so I was managing recruitment and pretty much Stax full-time.
Well, then that's an important point, because I mean, I say to everyone, oh, well, if you want to start up a business, keep your main job.
Yes.
And do this shit at night or whenever you can.
Yeah.
There's an example of it, and you've been doing that for a long time, and you're only just like, you know, over an 8 year period, you've only just started kicking off. So, like, that's pretty normal.
Absolutely.
I mean, I guess what I'm trying to get across to the audience is, you know, 8 years is normal.
It's, yeah, 100%. If you look at any great business, any successful business that's doing well over time, you know, if you listen to the founder's story, there's a whole story behind it. You know, it's the same proverb as, you know, bamboo, for example, takes years and years to develop on the ground before it sprouts. It just takes time, and most young people don't
only
want
see
to practice.
Like that one thing that is the overnight success.
Yeah, totally.
But they don't know how many nights before it's taken.
And then they don't account for things like COVID.
Yeah,
which is what I want to talk about. I'm going to go to the break, and I want to talk about that when I come back. But I guess when I come back, I want to talk about the business. So I want to talk about a couple of things. One, your branding. Two, your community. Three, how your supply chain, like how do you make sure your supply chain meets the demand? Because, you know, that's a difficult thing to do. And what happened during COVID? Which one of those did COVID interrupt? And what did you do to either take advantage of COVID, or alternatively, if you had to pivot your business, what did you have to do in terms of getting your business through COVID? We'll go to the break and we'll come straight back. So I'm here with Matilda and Don, and we are talking about the brand Stax, which is best described as an activewear brand. Yeah?
Yeah.
And, you know, we moved from Perth to Sydney in 2019, and they're up and running here, and they've been on this venture for 8 years, and they're a couple. And what's important here is before I go past that, the couple, how does the dynamic of, I mean, how does that work between you two guys? I mean, I know.
It's actually incredible.
It just does.
Don't shoot me. Come on. Don't tell me that.
People can't fathom this part of it. But, you know, I think it's crazy because Till is my romantic partner and my business partner. And we own each other's faces 24/7. But one cool thing that we often reflect on is that we get to share every experience with each other. What we can't fathom with other couples is that perhaps, Mike, in your experience, like if you have a wife, you have a girlfriend, you have this crazy business experience, you've hit your biggest grossing days, et cetera, and you go home and you try and explain that to your loved one, they don't get it. They're not there to celebrate with you. Till and I get to celebrate everything together, every high moment, every low moment. And then what we've learned, we're quite different in the mentality of how we operate.
Absolutely.
Till is very analytical and logical. She's not emotionally driven. I'm the complete opposite of that. I'm exceptionally emotional. I'm exceptionally creative.
Big dreamer. I kind of bring him back down a little bit.
I have these crazy ideas, and if I had to execute all my ideas, we'd be broke.
Yeah.
But what we've learned is there's a space where we complement each other. When if I pitch an idea to Till and if she doesn't get it, I know it's not ready for the market. If she gets it and we sort of negotiate with each other, I know it's going to be successful. So that's the work dynamic we have.
But what would you do? Like, would you get up like at five? You get up really early in the morning and first thing you do is have a coffee and just talk about what you're going to do for the day? Or do you say,
no,
okay,
no, we're going to talk rules.
About it? Yeah, what are the rules of engagement here?
Yeah.
How's it work?
I mean, we both have the same like goals and passion, and it's cool because we get to work towards that same thing as a team, which I think is amazing. It's great for our like romantic relationship as well because we have that same drive and we want to achieve the same thing together. But we do make an effort to kind of switch off, not be talking about finances in business.
That's always a tricky one.
In the beginning, I was obsessed with the brand, obsessed with the business. So, you know, for me, it was 24/7, and then, you know, it wasn't the case for Matilda. And that's something we had to sort of learn. We had to come up with a rule and say, you know, we only want to speak about business during business hours, but we need to focus on our personal lives and focus on, you know, cute date things and making sure that that area is taken care of as well. So we came up with, and it just became normal.
But it's also very cool because our brand is so fashion focused. We love fashion. So if we're talking about something that a designer's doing or something that we would talk about in like our social or romantic relationship, it still kind of ties into the business and the brand, which is, I think, is really cool because like we will talk about our passions and what we love, but we also get to do that at work, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. But what I was going to ask you then, Matilda, what about the part where it's shit things to talk about? That's good. I get it when it's cool and interesting. But what about when it's about money?
Yeah,
He spent too much money on something, or he paid, you know, he bought a machine that he just didn't need to buy, could have rented or got someone else. I mean, what about that sort of shit? I mean, how does that go down?
I think we're good at like just accepting things and not dwelling on them though as well.
We trust each other. So when it comes to the money thing, I discuss everything with Till, but she trusts that if my intuition is and my decision is that we'll do this, we'll back it and go for it 100%.
If it doesn't work out.
And if it doesn't work out, we pivot and fix it. We don't dwell. We don't worry about certain things.
No blame.
That's my
there's
department.
There's no blame.
Till's very switched on when it comes to finance as well, which blew me. That's one of the things that blew me away when we first got together. She's very smart with her finances. She's very smart at spending, very smart at understanding, you know, basic economics.
And thanks, I was, Dad.
Her dad taught her these crazy lessons. And I was actually quite.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Mesmerized by it. Whereas I, again, I'm a dreamer. Like, I don't mind spending a crazy amount on something, that's where we sort of complimented each other, because she'd say to me, Don, you can't really be spending X amount on this. It's not really going to yield a great return for the business. So we've learned to complement each other in that aspect. We just understand. We have like this telepathy.
And because we're working towards the same goal and the same dream, we don't take offense to each other's ideas. Or if I say, oh, maybe we shouldn't do that, Don doesn't get offended by it, because we both want the same thing for the business at the end of the day, which is...
It's funny, I always say, you know, the best partnership is where somebody cuts, the other one sews. And I don't mean that in a literal sense. Yeah. But in your case, it could be sort of like that's where you guys make clothes. But
yeah.
Cut and sewing, and I mean, my best business relationship with my brother, he's very good at sewing. I'm very good at cutting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hopeless at sewing, and I don't think he's all that good at cutting either, to be honest with you, although he would say he is. And in your case, it seems like the same. I mean, like, you're more the creative growth dude, you know, and looks like Matilda is sort of actually behind you with a broom sweeping up the mess you might make and making sure you don't fuck up.
Quite often.
You know, and you don't get upset about it. I mean, in my relationship, my dynamics with me and my brother, because I've worked with a family member all my life, we had, when you're younger, some massive blues. He's my younger brother. Like, huge, like, full on. But me, I have an argument with my brother. I get over it, like, in a minute. He used to affect him because he used to get upset. Like, he would get upset because I'm the older brother and, like, you know, so I would give him a mouthful. And it doesn't happen that like that today because we understand each other. Like, but that dynamic's really good, the cut. And so I define what it is, and it makes it much easier to work with. I cut, he sews. But like you said, fashion's an art form. I mean, I think once you put it into a definition, it's very much easier to deal with. Dynamics much easier to deal with if you actually pigeonhole things. I mean, and you didn't quite use the same definitions I'm using, but sounds like you've pigeonholed your strengths and weaknesses and your skills and what drives you and Matilda into a position where it's just easy to deal with it. And you can easily accept what comes about in terms of dynamics.
100%. And the integrity of the relationship. We have each other's back.
Yep.
We trust each other's
opinion. That's a really important one. Because my brother and I are the same. We'll die for each other in business, I'm talking about. And probably otherwise too. But like if someone, like you can, me and him can have a fight. But if someone comes at one of us, there's an old saying I used to say, you pull the cat's tail, you get the whole fucking cat. So, you know, it doesn't matter which part of us you go for, you get both of us at the same time. And, you know, we're quite ferocious. So, that's a good one, that one. And I think people listening to this, if you're talking about business dynamics, whoever you pick, and sometimes it's better to pick your partner or your brother or your sister or someone like that, because to be honest with you, they will protect you no matter what to the outside world.
Well, that's that mob mentality.
Yeah, totally.
You protect your family.
It's your tribe.
That's how it is with business. That's how it is with our staff in any case. Like and that's the environment we create within our brand even. I guess that's sort of...
It's tribal, nearly.
Yeah, but that's what's translating into the community as well. Like, Till has a group on Facebook, for example, called Girl Gang.
Called what?
Girl Gang. Matilda's Girl Gang. And I think it's got 3,000 or 4,000 girls in it, but they're hardcore Stacks fans, but they all have each other's back as well. It's the most beautiful community. I'm not allowed in it, but Till sort of shares some of the stuff she's allowed to share with me, just as a disclosure. But I think that's one of the values we have as individuals is just to practice that integrity and have great ethics and values. And it starts with us.
Well, how does it work? Okay, explain, go through that, the brand piece for me. I mean, I want to understand what your view on the brand is and like how have you built up the Stacks brand, like the various parts?
Personal relationships. You know, Mark, I would sell you myself and then you'd buy a product. You'd engage with Matilda and you'd end up supporting her and buying the product. And then you realize the product is top notch. And we'd compete with any brand that's doing the same product with us at the moment and we'll beat them on price point and quality. But the first point of engagement is engaging with us.
So how do you do that? Like what platforms or what methodology do you use to engage?
Instagram is huge for us.
Yep.
Massive for us. We've played in social on YouTube and stuff like that, but Instagram is probably our key at the moment.
It's an obvious one because it's fashion, it's photographable.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do it? So because, you know, people get a bit nervous about Instagram or social mediums generally, but particularly Instagram, like how do I do it? How do I cast myself? How often a day do I have to put up a photograph? What do I say in the narrative? When I use stories? Just take me through it a little bit.
For the Stacks IG, we use that, the Stacks Instagram, we use that like a catalogue. So we showcase all of our latest collections. When we're doing campaigns, we really treat it as a campaign. So we produce videos and films for our new collections. The Stacks Instagram is very aesthetically pleasing. It's all laid out like a catalogue, like a Vogue magazine kind of thing. Then my personal Instagram, I talk a lot about behind the scenes. I jump on there daily to post. I'm on stories all day. But we're resharing people. I think that's okay.
The key for the Stacks IG is we reshare majority of...
If you post on your story and you tag Stacks, we will see it and we'll reshare you on our page.
Right.
And I think that is...
So you're making available other people's content for your page.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily about the content. It's about showcasing that person. You
know, yeah, it's a good story.
That person gets a shout out.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I think that's... People really love that. And Stacks has come to a space where if you... Like people in my girl gang group on Facebook, for example, if they see someone in Stacks, they'll like go up and like be like, oh, I love your tights. Or we're wearing matching outfits, take a photo together. And I don't think that really exists with a lot of other brands, but I do think it's because of the community that Don and I have created. And it's like, if you're wearing Stacks, you have the same values as Don and I, so you can be friends with everybody that's wearing Stacks, if that makes sense.
And then there's the stories that we get from people that would send us messages of what they've achieved just because they started following the brand.
Yeah, or they're confident in our stuff.
Weight loss journeys, fitness journeys, personal journeys. And then people are building friendships just because they've seen each other wearing the brand.
Yeah.
At the gym, for example, and they're having coffee dates.
How do you know? How does it have Stacks written on or something? Does it got like a logo?
Oh,
or
a brand logo. So Stacks' branding is quite distinctive. It's very minimalistic. We focus a lot on block colours. We believe that you should be able to pair it and wear it at any occasion.
So you're talking about black, red, blue. Like when you say block, that's one colour, isn't it?
Yeah, one colour.
Yeah.
We don't do a lot of pattern stuff. We have collections in between where we'll come up and be creative and do something unique for a limited edition run. But for the most part, you know, our best black ties are becoming world famous at the moment.
Is that right?
It's incredible. We can't keep up with the demand. It's mind blowing. People buying 7-8 pairs at a time. I know. Because activewear is becoming what, you know, denim was the 60s, 70s.
Dress pants.
It's literally what
you
wear to work.
As you sit there with a denim jacket on, I've got denim jeans on.
Yeah.
Here are Lee's.
I'm in my tights.
And by the way.
Of course you'd be.
By the way, in the same breath, most women would be wearing black tights in the exact same experience.
Yeah.
I think Till's wearing them today, but.
It was funny. I was talking the other day to someone about there is a rising tide in relation to tights of any type. You know, they're all different types of tights that we were just talking about earlier, but. So how are you capitalizing on that rising tide? So, you know, like where are you digging yourself into that rising tide of demand? And so what are you doing to differentiate yourself from a saturation?
The market is incredibly saturated right now. I mean, there's so many brands that are doing it, young entrepreneurs that are coming out with the same sort of
that's
product.
What I'm saying. So what are you doing?
We looked at our proposition. We needed to create one thing. We need to have one thing that we could propose to the market that made us different and unique. And it's the same principle as, you know, Apple's iPhone and, you know, Mac is Big Mac and Coca-Cola is Coke. We branded the best black tights. We have this product called the best black tights. We got a catalog of probably 200-300 SKUs in our product range at the moment. But our one hero product is our best black tights and is the best pair of black tights on the market at the moment for $74 to $79.95, squat proof, moisture wicking.
So tell me what makes it best. I mean, what has your research told you about? Because I think that's very important for anyone listening because, look, to be honest, most markets, I don't give a shit what it is. Everything's saturated. I don't care. There's people coming at you. Come up with a good idea within 6 months, everyone's doing it and you're just getting diluted. And your point, you made a really good point. You've got to actually stand for something. And you've got to have one thing that you stand for, you do really well if you want to compete in a saturation environment. So can you explain to me, you guys explain to me what it is in your best black tights product that makes it so successful?
I think, obviously it's the most cliche things like the quality of the product, but we focus on creating a product that is figure flattering. You know, girls love it when it hugs you in. It looks really good.
Like proper
cinches you in at the waist.
High-waisted tights.
Yeah. High-waisted means it comes up high.
Higher, just over the belly button. Girls love that feeling of when it holds you in.
So is it about feeling?
100% about feeling and the fabric.
So it's about the emotion you get out of it.
100%. So we allow our customers to evangelize the brand. We've created this proposition. We say to you, we have the best pair of black tights for you. Try it. You don't like it, we'll figure it out. We'll help you. We believe that.
Honestly, it gets to a point where I believe in our best black tights so much. If you don't love the tights, it's a faulty pair.
Yeah.
Like that's our proposition because we have nailed the best black tights and that they're our bestsellers. And
that's the part that takes time. That's a brand part that takes time. Mm.
And you're young too. You're lucky. I mean, you're not lucky, but you're blessed in a sense that you're both young, relatively speaking, for business people. And you've got something that's already on top of the marketplace. It's always, you're only as good as your last win, of course. You've got to keep, everyone's going to be trying to knock you off. What do you do about that? Do you play defensive? In other words, defend your territory, defend the top of the hill?
No.
What do you do? Tell me what you do.
We stay in our own, in our own space.
That's something we're so passionate about. We don't compare ourselves to other brands. People say, who's your competitor? We don't know. We don't have one. We are doing our own thing. You know, we're launching things that we want to launch. We're doing things the way that we want to do them, and we've had success with it. So we just keep going like that. I mean, I think we've always got to stay like innovative and on top of our game and improving constantly, listening to customer feedback, because we don't, like, you know, if you're riding a bicycle, if you're speeding on a bicycle, you can't just stop pedaling because you'll fall off. I think you need to keep going forever. So no one kind of catches up as well. But we definitely don't compare ourselves to anyone else. We're just focused on what's working well for us. And as soon as it's not, we'll pivot.
I'm exceptionally aware of the market. Like, I understand the psychology and I study all the brands doing what we're doing because I want to make sure that we're on top of what we're doing in our space. But if we start comparing ourselves to a competitor, we're only trying to be the second best version of them. Mm. We have to stay authentic. We have to keep what we do organic and make sure we take advantage of the opportunities in the market. You know, if there's a new social media platform to get more attention, like TikTok, we have to go hard and
jump on it,
understand that change. It's how you engage with the consumer psychology, how you provide a service where people are getting their shipping in 2 or 3 hours, whether we have to start working with drones or whether we have to start being innovative in the machine around it. We've created the best black tights. We'll keep working on it. If there's a new way to blend the fabric, if there's new technology, we'll be first on that. We'll experiment with that. We'll test it and try it. If there's a better way to produce and a more sustainable and ethical way to produce the product, we'll work on that. But as far as the product is concerned, like, we're going to grow with fashion. We're going to grow with the industry. We are understanding and learning about textiles. It's forever evolving.
So why don't you just, can you just quickly give me a bit of an idea about supply chain? So, I mean, you obviously haven't got someone sitting there in Surry Hills stitching these things up. So how does this work in terms of meeting your demand?
We've got about 4 factories in China that we work with that have taken a really long time to build relationships with. Like, these people have become our family ultimately. We would, you know, if COVID wasn't around, we usually do 2 or 3 trips a year just to meet with the factories to make sure that they're working.
In Guangzhou?
Guangzhou, yeah. So, yeah. That's pretty much where we have our product.
And what happened when, there are friends of mine who are in the rag trade, and when COVID first hit, this is not hit here, but COVID sort of closed down a lot of the factories in, normally they come back from Chinese New Year, but they closed.
Yeah.
What happened?
That was crazy for us. So COVID broke out in China and the whole world thought we wouldn't get it.
More around December, January sort of thing.
December, January, and, you know, they were keeping under wraps and trying to, you know, figure it out and fix it internally. And our contacts over there, our team over there was communicating clearly to us about it, but we didn't understand it. We thought, oh, it's just a flu. You know, we thought it would go away. We didn't really put too much thought into it.
You caught with your tights down.
Yeah, quite literally. We purchased 3 months in advance. We were working on 6 and 12 months in advance. So we had these big purchase orders in the line, and then they went on their Chinese New Year. So that's a month off.
That's right, beginning of February, yeah.
That's beginning of February. And then that's when the pandemic really started breaking out at the end of Feb.
And as I understand, they didn't open up again.
They didn't open up for another 2 months.
Yeah.
So we're quite fortunate in that aspect. We had a container en route in the middle of COVID when the whole world went into shutdown. And I have to say to you that we had spent all our money on the shipping. It's the craziest thing because we had forecasted to drop our biggest collection ever. I think it was a 40-foot container full of product, really, really big spend. And it was in the middle of the sea somewhere and we had no idea if it was going to make it.
The world went into lockdown.
So Till and I are sitting in the office and we're just trying to navigate, like, what the fuck are we going to do?
Totally.
It was really, really tough because no one knew. You had no answers. Everywhere you went,
No one has experience to guide you on it. Yeah.
So we just kept going. We had inventory in the warehouse to sort of sustain us. And then we had this phenomenal campaign plan for April, you know, Don being creative. We wanted to fly in 12 models and shoot them in this venue, et cetera. And we couldn't, you know, social distancing was a thing. Airports were shut, so we couldn't do that. So Till ended up modeling for this campaign. And we dropped it in April and it ended up being our biggest grossing campaign ever.
And but did you get the stuff?
Container arrived.
By the way, we ended up getting the container through.
Thank God.
Because obviously they were still shipping. Thank God.
Mm.
And yeah, I guess that probably would have led into the COVID story. But going back to the supply chain, you know, that was stressful. We learned a lot. The factory, you know, the integrity of the workers there was brilliant because they still wanted to see through their commitments. So they still worked as much as they could. And the thing to understand with China is you have these cities like Guangzhou, and then you have millions of factory workers that come to the cities to work, and they get to, that's why they take the break. They go back to their villages, which is very remote. China is incredibly big. And they all couldn't come back to work. So they had no workers in the factories at the time. So you had the people that could work, working 24-hour shifts just to sort of keep up with the supply for, you know, many Australian businesses and businesses around the world. So we're very grateful to them. I know that, you know, a lot of the factories over there don't get a good rep, but my goodness, like, they are incredible.
Well, I've heard stories that the factories over there are unbelievable. I mean, I was involved in a business some years ago, a technology business where we used to get a lot of our tech built there. It was hardware tech. And like the place is like going into a specialized hospital. Everybody had white coats on and face masks and like hand gloves and special shoes. They came in, the floors are beautiful, white polished concrete, and everything was like it was as big as a football field. And it was like 1,000 machines, and there was like people. It was like a military precision joint. Like, it was full on impressive, like seriously impressive.
I think there's such a stigma about factories over there. You know, with the
they're not
whole,
sweatshops anymore.
They're not sweatshops anymore. I mean, I'm sure, and within any industry in any country, you're going to find people that cut corners and are unethical. But we spent a lot of time developing. And by the way, that factory that we work with has grown by something like 3 times since we started working with them. So we are able to support them as well whilst generating great revenue to grow our team here. So we're supporting 2 economies in our little space we're quite proud of. Yeah, factories over there are brilliant these days.
Yeah, that's my feedback and my one experience with them. They're pretty brilliant at what they do in that regard. So what did COVID do then for you? I mean, it sounds like you just slipped through the door before the door closed.
Yeah, COVID was crazy. The land of the unknown, right? Our machine was built. I realized that e-com was the way for the future. So we were ready. We were ready for the pandemic. We didn't understand what that meant, but the machine was in place. You know, AusPost did a phenomenal job, are currently doing a phenomenal job.
So you use them for your Star Trek and AusPost for your deliveries?
Yeah, and DHL for international. Yep. And they've kept operating throughout the whole period.
Every day when they come in, I was like, "You're not going into lockdown, are you? You can still come to work."
Service.
Yes,
they were considered.
I was confirming with the postie every day. I was like, "Please turn up tomorrow." So thankfully, that all went.
We were so worried. I mean, to be honest, we came out on the great end of COVID. We sometimes feel a bit weird saying that because so many people are struggling, and you kind of feel guilty. But COVID did wonders for us in the sense of people were attentive to their phones, people working from home, people had a crazy need for comfortable activewear to wear at home. It started this new revolution, if you will. So
no one went to work with work clothes anymore because they weren't going to work.
And that's going to change anyway. I mean, most people are working remotely now. When people go into the office, they're not going to be wearing suits.
It's funny, you know. That's one of the great things for COVID. One of the great things, there's not many, but one of them for me, like no one in our office wears a shirt and like an open neck shirt or anything. Everyone just chills out, like just wearing a t-shirt in a pair of, you know, like if you've got something important on, you can frock up a little bit. But generally speaking, it's much more relaxed, and that's the way it should be.
100%.
There's always bullshit wearing jackets and ties and shirts. And
I think COVID forced us to grow fast. The world, it's forced the world to grow fast. You know, e-commerce has been teasing the economy for the last 15 years. Not many businesses took it seriously. A lot of businesses were still just stuck with brick and mortar. They were stuck and happy to stay in their little stores and, you know, get on with it for however the next generation may be. But we were ready for e-com.
Well, COVID or being at home inspired us to take some risks and do something different. And it's probably a little bit like in a very sort of ground down way, the way Matilda thought of her life was, oh, I'm just going to be in the recruitment business and
safe
and just keep doing what I'm always doing. And all of a sudden she'd come across you and, you know, like you gave us some inspiration. I think COVID has inspired us through necessity to make changes. And then we thought, hang on, that's pretty good. And, you know, just like in terms of business, how businesses are run, like there's inspiration come out of it. And people, tights, I mean, I guess, for women at least, tights is the way to go. And active wear, generally speaking, like just more relaxed stuff. And I guess what you're saying to me is that active wear, it's actually much more functional. Like you can wear it to the gym, where you can wear it hanging out. You can pick your kids up from school with it on, or drop your kids off to school with it on. Or you can go down the shop and get a cup of coffee, or you can meet up with a client or a customer. And everybody sort of feels pretty relaxed about it these days. To some extent, you were well positioned for the speed up in the way people shop and the way people live their lives. I mean, I think that's sort of, you would never know that COVID's coming, but e-commerce sped up at a speed that I've never seen it going before.
Absolutely.
We're just so grateful we were online already. Like that's, like Don said, like we didn't have to pivot from a store and jump online and learn how to manage all of that.
Can you give me a sense of how much more business you did as a result? So how much more demand you experienced, you know, when people eventually worked out, hang on, it's not too bad working from home and I'm going to go buy some stuff?
So we grew 2,000%.
In what period?
In the last financial year or the last calendar year.
Wow.
And majority of that is from April leading up until this point.
2,000%.
2,000%. Yeah. It's an insane statistic.
That's a big growth.
Which is crazy to think we didn't even know if our container was arriving.
Yeah,
like we honestly were
scared. So the team before COVID was Till and myself in the office. We had one employee and then another casual. It was a team of four.
So who boxes all this shit up? How do you
work? Well, at the time it was Till, myself, you know, Beck, and then Jess at the time. So four of us were working before April. We now have a team of 20. So we have, I think, 4 to 6 in the office and the rest are all, you know, working in the warehouse.
We've acquired our third warehouse now.
We've acquired our third warehouse this year.
Wow.
I think that's like what you said about how can we make like the black tights better, you know, when you said there's other people doing it and Don said it's the process and the whole experience. That's the experience, the gift boxing. It's just thinking like outside of the box with the gift box.
We work for our community. We want people to have that
have
experience.
The whole experience. When you're shopping from Stacks, it's more than just getting a pair of tights. You're getting like, you're getting a beautiful box. You're getting a whole experience.
So that's a very important point. See, because one of the things that got taken from us during, and particularly if you're in Victoria, but one of the things that got taken from us during the COVID period was experiential things. And unfortunately, generally speaking, digital shopping doesn't give you an experience. You're not walking in the shop. You don't sort of, see your friend over there, or, you know, I mean, you know, you don't sort of get around, touch things, because there is an experience in a shop. There's color, light, movement. There's all sorts of things.
Touch and feel.
Touch, feel, et cetera. And all your sensory sort of, there's a lot of sensory outcomes as opposed to digital. You just go, oh, that's my size, that's the price, and I know who they are, that's cool. But what you're doing here is you're giving us back an experience. So, because I'm often saying anything where we can actually deliver the experience that people are missing out on, not the same experience, but an experience, because people are missing out on, generally speaking, on experiences. They can't travel, they can't do a lot of things, okay? Those experiential style businesses should do very well. Because, and by the way, I'm not paying for that experience. I'm paying for the product, $79, but you're sending me an experience, and it's an experience I can actually pass on to someone else too. And I can share it by film if I want to. A lot of people do that, but I can hand, like you're saying, the experience of getting a beautifully boxed pair of tights that I might be buying for my sister, for argument's sake, I can give it to her that at Christmas time, and I can transfer that experience to her. And I think those sorts of things, they're really hot tips for people in business. You know, you've got to work out, it's not just about being e-commerce. E-commerce is as much about all the other things as it is just about being able to not have to go to the shop and buy it online.
It's not just about your product. And people often ask me, Don, what do you sell?
Well, that is your product, the whole experience.
Yeah, we don't sell tights. We sell to people.
Yeah.
The most important thing is your interaction with the person, the singular person, that one person. I had the speech with our team on Monday when I was saying, like, take be vigilant when you're picking and packing the order. Just remember that person has jumped online, has waited in queue for 3 hours online to buy that one product. They're thrilled to buy it. Take care when you're packing it. Like we imagine when someone's opening up their product, they're a fan of Stacks. It's supposed to bring them joy. It's supposed to bring them like that sense of like, whoa, this is crazy. I'm so excited. I'm so happy.
I love the boxes. I feel like I love the boxes like so much more than a regular person would. Like I just, they are beautiful. And I'm all about the branding and the experience and like the luxury of receiving something. Yeah, our packaging's gorgeous.
Yeah, so like, you know, you get a beautiful box. I mean, girls, I mean, I don't, but women tend to keep boxes too. These keepable boxes, so to speak.
Yeah, very. We hope they keep them expensive.
Yeah, very expensive. Yeah. So, I mean, you go that extra mile, but you cut into your margin a little bit to make the experience better.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
But, you know, e-com can afford it.
No, 100%. Do you have a question for me? I'm going to ask all the questions. So you got anything you want to ask me?
Yeah, I was wondering, like, from your perspective being experienced in business, you know, I'm looking at Bunnings, for example, and I'm wondering, will they survive the next generation if they don't go e-com, if they don't do something significant? Because I see my dad and I see my dad's dad, you know, that's their number one shoppers, but they're not growing.
Well, and they're not going to be going there forever.
Yeah. I was wondering, like, because you're trendy, you're really thinking in our space, which is cool, but you also, like, you know, our parents sort of generation. I was wondering what your approach would be to flipping a business like that and making it relevant.
I think when it comes to places like Bunnings, it's a very interesting thing about Bunnings. Bunnings have created, they're going to compete with people who are going to be able to deliver these various products online, but Bunnings has every product, from not just in terms of building materials. It's got to a point now where they've actually killed off anybody who's a florist, who wants to sell, you know, vegetable seedlings and all that sort of stuff. And if you want to buy something, you can buy it at Bunnings. Now, one of the things that I've found is that young kids, because I've tried this out with my godson, he's 11, and he loves going to Bunnings. He actually loves wandering around. I mean, people my generation, we love going to Bunnings, and I would go there every weekend if I could. It's a little bit far away from my house, but I would go there every weekend because I actually enjoy. I always end up buying shit I don't need. It doesn't. I will actually walk down aisles and say, "Oh, hang on, that's something I need." I'll go there with a list, but I'll go down every single aisle and buy what I think I need. And generally speaking, it's not what I need. But I've been taking him on. I've taken him on a few occasions, and he actually loves wandering around. So the question becomes Bunnings' relevance for the future, whether or not younger generations will enjoy going to places like Bunnings. And the question then comes down to, can Bunnings provide that experience for kids to make them get wedded to the idea of going to Bunnings? And once you're wedded to that idea, you just keep doing it. As you grow up, you continue to do it. The other thing about Bunnings too is that's important, I think, as opposed to buying stuff online, is like if you're going in there, for example, to buy something for home handyman stuff, like, you know, like, and we're becoming much more that way. But COVID's sort of made us much more conscious and aware of what we've got to fix at home. And Bunnings has probably killed it during this period, I'd say. Most of us don't know what it is we're buying. I mean, I'm not a tradesperson, so I don't know what I'm buying. One of the things really good about Bunnings is that they actually got people, experts in there who can, well, you know, like experienced people who can tell you about paint. So a lot of times we need help. So the question becomes, is this, as opposed to what you sell, what Bunnings sells is so broad and such a wide array of product that it's not just the experience anymore. It comes down to, can the internet replace what Bunnings offers? I'm similar to you. I'm looking to see how Bunnings evolves in this e-commerce environment. They're online, obviously, but it's very difficult, I find, and they're so dominant in this part of the marketplace, and they're basically just priced out, drowned out everybody.
Yeah.
It's going to be very interesting to see whether Bunnings can survive a potential Amazon or someone like that who might want to take them on. My gut feeling is right now I think Bunnings could improve a lot in terms of loyalty and all that. So I don't think they reward us enough for the people who do go there all the time. I'm not saying I want to get a reward for it, but I don't know if they're really conscious of the importance of how important they are to us. I don't think they realize that.
Mm.
And I don't think, therefore, they reward us or keep us in their loop. They don't talk to me enough.
Mm.
I mean, I don't get much back from them in a digital sense.
We don't see anything on social. We don't engage with the brand.
But and they don't engage with me either.
Mm.
They don't sort of say, "Mate, by the way, there's these things on sale," or "This is happening, you know, next week or the week after, why don't you come and have a check it out or something?" Well, we notice that you've been buying these things, but have you ever thought about, you know, like that education process? I think Bunnings could do a lot better in the engagement, as long as they know I'm someone who goes there.
I just wonder if, you know, in the future, not too distant future, if like an Amazon player comes in and, you know, starts attacking that market share with a better experience and a better...
Well, that's what I'm saying. Bunnings need to make it the experience better, but the digital experience needs to be better. I mean, the experience is pretty good once you're in there, but you need to get a better digital experience. And Amazon could do this. I mean, like, because they could just build a massive warehouse somewhere. And you know, it's about real estate too, because I think you do have to go there to these stores where you buy goods like Bunnings type stuff, because, you know, it's not like going to it's not like buying a pair of tights. You know, once I've got them, I know they fit and they're good. You know, at Bunnings, you're buying a nail. You might need this size nail, that size nail, that size screw, this size screw. But then you need a bloody a drill bit. Then you need to buy the drill, and then you need to buy the, you know, like, it just goes on and on and on. Whereas buy the tights, I've got the tights, so I'm cool. I'd hate to see Amazon take control of this, though. I would not like that. I would be really unhappy if someone like Amazon took Bunnings out of the market.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Really good to have you. That's
so
cool.
Much.
Thank you so much.
Stacks. Appreciate the active brand.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.